Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Tracy B. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
So recently we had an episode about the Treaty of Waitangi, which was the document that founded New Zealand as a nation, and in a lot of ways, it represented a step forward in relationships between particularly the British and Indigenous peoples, right? It was not perfect, but in a lot of ways, it was better than things that had gone on before. Today's subject actually happened after that and kind of represents the idea that there were a lot of problems going on between colonizing governments and Indigenous peoples. Like, this was not the magical silver bullet at which point everyone started operating from a better perspective.
No,
at all.
In many cases, the New Zealand events were really quite singular for their time.
Yes. So what we're going to talk about today is about a conflict between the British and the Asante people from what is now Ghana. At the time, it was known as the Gold Coast Africa. And the Asante-British War of 1900 is known to the Asante people as the Ya Asantewa War of Independence. Ya Asantewa was a woman leader in this whole resistance that became really important to it and to the whole history of the Asante people. So the British called this the Last Asante Uprising or the Asante War, and some people also call it the War of the Golden Stool, for reasons that we'll talk about in just a bit. It capped about 100 years of war and conflict between the British and the Asante. And they had clashed, like, really officially as wars, not just as skirmishes, in 1807, 1824, 1826, 1873, and 74. That was one conflict that spanned 2 years. And 1896, bringing us finally to this conflict we're going to talk about today, which happened in 1900.
So the Asante Empire occupied part of what is now Ghana, and the Asante Union was made up of component states, each of which had its own royalty. The leadership of each component state was matrilineal, with kings and queens having their own unique roles within the state. The Asantehene was, and still is, the supreme monarch over all of them.
Europe's interest in the Gold Coast started out being mostly about the slave trade. But as European and American nations abolished slavery, the colonial focus shifted instead to the region's natural resources, including its gold mines. Britain was just one of the European nations that was colonizing parts of Africa at this point, and so it was also looking to protect its interests from the encroachment of other European countries.
The British offered the Asante Union the opportunity to become a British protectorate a couple of times in the late 1800s. Both of these times, Asantehene Prempeh I, who had become the supreme monarch after a lengthy civil war, turned the offers down.
He wasn't opposed to the entire idea of working with the British, though. He arranged a diplomatic mission to go to England in 1895 in the spirit of cooperation and friendship.
And the British didn't really negotiate with the delegation, though. Instead, in January of 1896, while the Asante delegation was still in England, the British invaded their kingdom.
After this invasion, Prempeh I, still hoping for a peaceful and productive relationship with the British, did go against his advisors' opinions and agree for the Asante to become a protectorate of Great Britain.
And at this point, rather than beginning to work together productively, the British arrested Prempeh I and his family and other members of the monarchy, and they sent them into exile. British troops also looted the royal palace and desecrated a mausoleum. Reasons on exactly why the British returned their acceptance of British rule with this sort of almost savage treatment is still unclear.
Yeah, I could not figure that out in all of my research for this. Like, the only reason I could possibly fathom would be, like, just to be jerks, which...
Success!
It worked! In July of that year, the Asante used money they had raised through a tax to hire lawyers in an attempt to negotiate a peaceful return of their leaders. The colonial office refused, though, and the Asante, who believed that this exile was a temporary measure, decided to just bide their time until the king could come back. So they were really pretty sure that the Asantehene was going to at some point be brought back to them, and that was inevitable. So they thought, well, we might as well cooperate while we wait for our people to be brought back.
However, over the next few years, the British did some things that were really just intolerable to the Asante. First, the British dissolved the Asante Union and established treaties individually with each of the component states, and had them report to British authorities rather than to a supreme Asante leader.
The British also gave missionaries free rein to practice in Asante, which means that they set up schools with the hope of converting their students to Christianity. And that naturally meant trying to turn the students away from their tribal beliefs and practices.
And the British also instituted a sort of free trade agreement with other kingdoms and tribes who flocked to the capital of Kumasi to trade and look for work. And this may sound like a fairly innocuous thing, but it really threatened the Asante economic system.
On the subject of work, the British also started mandating that the Asante carry out compulsory labor on public works projects, like helping to build roads and buildings.
And the British also wanted to abolish slavery. And although the transatlantic slave trade had been declining throughout the 19th century, slavery was still being practiced domestically in many parts of the world, and that included the Asante Empire. The Asante objection to ending the practice of slavery was much like what other parts of the world had seen. Without slavery, there simply wasn't enough labor available in industries like farming and gold mining, so abolition further threatened the economic order.
Yeah, we are not at all trying to argue in favor of slavery here, but the Asante did not want to abolish slavery at this point, so the fact that the British were forcing them to did not sit well. So by the time the next major part of the story takes place, the Asante were really, really unhappy with the British presence in the Gold Coast. And before we get into why...
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
So to get back to our story, on March 28, 1900, Sir Frederick Hodgson, who was Britain's governor of the Gold Coast, called for a meeting of all the Asante leaders outside of the British fort in the capital of Kumasi. And at this meeting, he made four pretty big, important announcements.
The first announcement was that the exiled Asantehene would not be coming back to Kumasi. Not ever.
The second had to do with this whole compulsory labor thing. He was pretty much saying it was not negotiable, and the Asante were just going to have to do it.
The third was related to an indemnity that the Asante were to pay according to the Treaty of Femina, which had ended a previous war with the British in 1874. And Hodgson announced that the Asante were to pay interest on that indemnity, along with paying for the expenses that the British had incurred in their 1896 invasion of the kingdom. And then he produced an itemized list of which tribes were to pay how much money.
His last announcement was really the straw that broke the camel's back. He demanded to be brought the golden stool so that he could sit on it. Now, stools had been part of the Asante culture and other cultures in that part of Africa for centuries. They were symbols of a tribe's leadership, and at the tribal level, they were also where the monarch would sit when he was ruling. When the monarch was not there, it would be placed on its side so that no other person or no other soul could find a seat there.
And the golden stool was actually a little different. According to the Asante belief, a shaman conjured it from the sky, and it had come to rest on the lap of the first Asantehene. But it wasn't a throne. It embodied the soul and the spirit of the Asante people. The safety and prosperity of the Asante were tied to the safety of this stool, and it's a deeply sacred object, and it is not for random sitting on.
So in a move that really could not possibly be more symbolic of most of the worst aspects of Western colonialism, Hodgson basically said, please bring me your most sacred, most important, most cherished object and allow me to put my big white buttocks directly onto it.
Yeah, it conjures for me like that image of the bully that kind of grabs the little kid and just sits on him to be mean.
Yeah.
Except add to that the layer of like sacred belief and spirituality on it.
It was blasphemy.
Yeah.
Like, it was definitely blasphemy.
On its own, this demand already would have been one of the most offensive things that Hodgson could have possibly said, like, this bring me your stool. But on top of the inherent offense and that blasphemy, he also asked for the stool in a really arrogant and entitled way. Quote, where is the golden stool? Why am I not sitting on the golden stool at this moment? I am the representative of the paramount power. Why have you relegated me to this chair? Why did you not take the opportunity of my coming to Kumasi to bring the golden stool and give it to me to sit upon?
This was completely shocking to the Asante leaders and chiefs who were present. They were completely stunned by this entire business. And the idea that British people would claim the stool and say that they were to sit on it was so appalling and shocking that most of the people just left the meeting without a word.
However, almost immediately, they started planning to fight back, and the war that began almost immediately would go on for months.
So one of the people who had been present at this meeting was Ya Asantewaa. And she had been present on behalf of her grandson, who was one of the kings who had been exiled. She was about 60 at this point. And she and her family governed Ejisu, which was about 19 miles away from the capital of Kumasi. So she was sort of like a queen mother. And she immediately, basically on the way out, started to question and taunt the men about why they were submitting so peacefully to the British when the British were obviously being so horrible and offensive.
Queen Asantewaa and other leaders arranged to have a meeting at the home of a man named Opoku Mensa.
In this meeting, they had two orders of business, and first and foremost was to ensure the safety of the golden stool. The British had actually already started trying to find it prior to this whole meeting in front of the fort, and hearing that the British were looking for the stool had already gotten some of the chiefs talking about mounting a resistance. The stool actually remained hidden away for more than 20 years.
And the next order of business in this meeting was plotting a war against the British. The war council selected Ya Asantewaa to lead their resistance, and she accepted.
So it's not completely clear why they chose a woman for this role. This was not really within the norms of gender roles among the Asante at this time. There had been some female diplomats before. Like we said earlier, queens had specific roles that they were responsible for within the governing of their community, but not usually as a straight-up war leader. It's possible that part of this was just strategic. The British wouldn't expect a woman to be taking charge in that way. And it's also possible that she had a tactical advantage by living in Ejisu, so she was close enough to the capital to be able to do things, but they wouldn't be under as much careful scrutiny as if they stayed in the capital itself to try to mount their resistance.
So regardless of what their logic was for choosing her, Ya Asantewaa basically became a military commander. She was responsible for strategizing, planning, and executing all of it. She was the one making all the calls and finding all the resources behind the scenes.
The fighting started in earnest a few days later on April 2nd when British forces were in Bari trying to find the golden stool. Asante fighters, who had been tipped off that the British were going to be there, surrounded them and opened fire.
And the Asante continued to harry the British for the next several weeks. And the next major battle took place on April 23rd when the Asante slowly encircled a column of British soldiers before opening fire.
Surround the enemy maneuver was an ongoing theme in their resistance. The Asante were armed with an assortment of firearms and knives. Some of these were Dane guns. These were very long-barreled, muzzle-loading firearms that had originally been made in Europe and were introduced in Africa by the Dutch. At this point, though, they were being made locally, and the term Dane gun eventually came to be applied to pretty much any firearm that was locally being made in Western Africa.
The Asante's weapons paled in comparison to the British troops' military firearms, so they really had to rely on something other than direct confrontation. So they would cut a path through the bush parallel to the British troops' movement and then come out of the jungle to surround them.
They also made really heavy use of scouting, laying ambushes, sniping from trees, and using blockades and stockades to block British movements and provide their own defense. These structures that they were building could be huge. They would be made of really enormous jungle logs. They were approximately 10 to 12 feet high sometimes. The Asante would also make smaller blockades that were hidden in the bush parallel to the roads that the British traveled on so that they could take cover from behind them and then shoot the troops as they passed by.
On April 28th, the resistance fighters had another meeting at the home of Apakumensa. They decided to try to expand the fight for Asante independence by calling in the leaders of the Asante states who hadn't yet taken a side.
They did get some support, but it wasn't completely effective. Some of the states had been on opposite sides during the civil war that had started in 1885, after which Prempeh I had become the leader. Because the British had established treaties with all of the different component states independently, dissolving the union that had held them together before, some tribes decided to side with the British rather than with the troops that were fighting for independence.
The following day, the Asante lay siege to the fort at Kumasi. Missionaries, traders, and others took refuge inside the fort, and they were besieged until July 15th. The Asante also cut the telegraph wires and freed the prisoners from the jail inside the capital.
So the siege was possibly the most dramatic part of the war, because as is always the case with sieges, conditions inside the fort got just progressively worse and worse and more disgusting and horrifying the longer the siege went on.
But the blockades and the stockades were really the most effective part of the Asante strategy. The Asante fighters made very efficient use of them, and they found ways to position them that would provide both cover and a vantage point. British guns could not penetrate them, and it was only at the very end of the fighting that they figured out a combination of weapon, ammo, and firing distance that would actually allow their cannons to break through.
The siege of the capital city was lifted in July after British reinforcements arrived from the coast, and the breakthrough in how to get past the Asante's stockades followed about a month later. So the tide of the battle really turned against the Asante in the late summer of 1900.
They had been able to inflict heavy damages while taking on few casualties of their own. But once the siege was broken, freeing up the British from having to worry about it, and they had the capability to knock down all the stockades and barricades, the British fighting effort became both effective and punitive.
The British really shifted at that point from defending themselves to putting down a rebellion. And as the war progressed into September, the British turned to just burning down crops and villages to the ground.
At various points, the two sides attempted to negotiate, but the negotiations never really panned out. They always fell through, or someone would break the armistice and the fighting would resume.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
The last battle in this war took place on September 30th, and in this fight, about 150 of the Asante's fighting force of 600 remaining men were killed. From there, the British just rounded up and arrested the resistance leaders who were still alive, and those who were not executed joined the previously exiled Asante leadership in the Indian Ocean archipelago of the Seychelles, and this included Ya Asantewaa.
Although the fighting had mostly ended the previous fall, the war wasn't officially over until March of 1901. Asante became a British colony that September and a crown colony that fell under the Gold Coast colonies in 1902.
Ya Asantewaa died in exile in 1921 when she was about 90.
In 1924, Prempeh I and others of Ya Asantewaa's kin were repatriated, and they later negotiated the exhumation and return of the bodies of people who had died in exile so they could be returned home and buried there. He also secured the Golden Stool.
With Prempeh I's repatriation, the Asante Confederation of States was reestablished. The British officially recognized this confederacy in 1935, and the Asante continue to be one of Ghana's ethnic groups, with the Asantehene's lineage continuing until today, although Ghana itself is a republic and not a monarchy. And also, maybe coincidentally, maybe not, Ghana was the first African nation to declare itself independent from British colonialism.
More recently, Ya Asantewaa has appeared on Ghana's postage stamps and also as a watermark on currency.
She was really unique in Asante history. Sometimes, as we said, there could be a woman who was occupying a stool that was normally held by a man, and when this happened, that woman might have a more military presence in the duties that she was responsible for. But Ya Asantewaa was really an outlier. A woman's role in war in this culture was normally about being supportive and like supporting the men, inspiring the men to fight, plus ceremonial war songs and dances. On the other hand, Ya Asantewaa really led the entire war. So she became the first female war leader of the Asante. And it's important to note that while the Asante did not win this war, it was an entire movement of resistance that sparked a lot of pride in the culture. So it was sort of a moral victory, even though it was not a literal victory.
And Queen Asantewaa, you know, as part of her leadership, really roused the men and inspired them with passionate speeches, both before and during the war. She was essentially the commander-in-chief of the Asante army. She took an active part in negotiations with the British throughout the whole event.
In 2000, Ghana observed the centennial of the war, and in part to try to bring in tourist trade to help the economy, they opened a Ya Asantewaa Museum that year in Edwizo. Although I found one article that said that it had later burned down. I had trouble confirming that before we got into the studio.
Do you have some listener mail to cap off this story?
I do, and our listener mail is actually somewhat related because it ties back into the Treaty of Waitangi episode that we started talking about at the beginning of this podcast, which I didn't realize until we were really sitting down in the studio that wait, this thing that we talked about today happened after that.
Yeah.
Which, like, that raises a number of implications. So I actually have a couple of pieces of mail. One is from Ryan, and Ryan forwarded on a note actually from the Waitangi Tribunal. I had posed the question at the end of the episode of how many claims there are before the Waitangi Tribunal, because I hadn't been able to find that out before coming into the studio. So Ryan did what any awesome person should do, which is that he asked a librarian, specifically asked the librarian at the Waitangi Tribunal, who said that as of that day's date, which was June 9th, there are 2,424 registered claims on record. So that's 2,424 claims of a law or an act that has gone against the spirit of the tribunal. That does not include the ones that are unregistered or the ones where the registration was declined. So that is the number. Thank you, Ryan, for asking a librarian, and thank you, librarians, for being awesome.
Librarians have the power.
They do. The other note that I got is from Sue, and Sue says, thank you very much for another brilliant podcast. I thought I would give you a little insight into how the treaty continues to be a living document and guide the lives of New Zealanders today. As a preschool teacher, I am regarded as an agent of the Crown and therefore obligated and proud to uphold the principles of the treaty, participation, protection, and partnership of the Maori in their education. The New Zealand education system has not always been geared toward the best interests of the Maori. Early colonial schools separated Maori from European and also restricted the curriculum for Maori, so they were only taught the skills needed for laboring jobs. In later years, Te Reo Maori, which is the Maori language, was forbidden from being spoken at schools, forcing Maori youngsters to assimilate into the European culture. It was feared Te Reo Maori would disappear. And I apologize. I tried so hard to be able to say this, and there's like a roll in the R that I cannot replicate with my American English tongue. So to get back to the letter, it was feared Te Reo Maori would disappear, which led to the efforts to revive the language. The Treaty Tribunal heard a claim to make Te Reo Maori a treasure, which they found in favor of, and Te Reo was made an official language in 1987. In 1996, the education system took another significant step forward with the release of Te Whareke, the first bicultural early childhood curriculum in the world. The document is written in both Te Reo and English and incorporates the Maori worldview into the education of all our young. This is the curriculum that guides my teaching practices today. Although not yet fluent in Te Reo, I use it daily with the children at my preschool and respect the values of the Maori worldview. Furthermore, the Ministry of Education funds many full Maori immersion education centers, bilingual and immersion Maori units in primary schools and college. You are now even able to take university exams and submit assignments in Te Reo Maori. Hopefully our positive steps forward can help ease some of the not-so-wise decisions of the past. And then she says, just for a little fun quirk to end with, Maori and New Zealand Sign Language are the only official languages of New Zealand. English has never been given official status, but is the de facto official language of the country by virtue of the fact that it is used in government departments and sessions, and that a very large majority of the population speaks it and nothing else. This always appears in pub quizzes here. Thanks again, Sue. Yes, thank you very much, Sue. I was very glad to get this letter because we mentioned in that episode that, like, while the spirit of the treaty overall seems to be coming from a good place, definitely a lot of things that happened after the treaty was signed were not from a good place. But I didn't want to go into a litany of examples about why, because that would have, I think, distracted from the core part of the podcast. So I was glad to get this note. I also got a series of contradictory corrections on how to pronounce Waitangi. We're so doing our hardest best with pronouncing words.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it so many times. You know,
the
horse should be deceased at this point. But again, we grew up speaking English. Our tongues can't always cluck the same ways as other languages.
No, and I sort of, like, I want everyone who listens to the podcast to remember how hard it was the first time they tried to learn another language other than their native language for the first time. Unless they were extremely small children, it was probably pretty difficult. So now imagine trying to do that for every language on Earth.
Once a week.
We're seriously, seriously trying our best, so... So thank you to those of you who send us helpful things and not mean things on that score. If you would like to write to us about this or any other subject, we're at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. Our Facebook is facebook.com/MissedInHistory, and our Twitter is MissedInHistory. Our Tumblr is missedinhistory.tumblr.com, and we're on Pinterest at pinterest.com/MissedInHistory. If you would like to learn a little bit more about one of the reasons why the British even cared about what was going on in Ghana at this point in history, come to our website and put the word gold in the search bar. You will find how gold works, because that was super important at this point. You can learn about that and a whole lot more at our website, which is howstuffworks.com, and you can find show notes and an archive of every episode and lots of other cool stuff at our other website, which is missedinhistory.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at price that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.